This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Earlier this month, the American Federation of Teachers released a report that has started a political uproar in the education world. Simply put, AFT analysts took the U.S. Department of Education's 2003 National Assessment of Educational Progress in Reading and Math, the so-called National Report Card, and compared the performance of charter school and public school students. Across the board, kids in charter schools lagged well behind their counterparts in public schools. Last week, supporters of charter schools took out full-page ads in major newspapers to refute the findings of the report. The debate is important because so many people see charter schools as the wave of the future. Their promise is innovation, community involvement, flexibility, and less bureaucracy. But what about academics and accountability? Charter schools are independent from local school boards, but they're paid for with public money. We need to emphasize that by their very nature, there are all kinds of charter schools with all kinds of curricula. Most of them are only a few years old. And there's great debate over how much information about these schools is available, how it's analyzed, and what it means. Still, even some supporters say the AFT report raises serious questions. What's the alternative when the alternative fails? Later in the program, we'll go back to Athens for a report card on the Olympic Games, and we'll read from your letters. But first, charter schools. If you have experience with a charter school as a parent, teacher, or administrator, give us a phone call. The number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. Bella Rosenberg joins us now, author of the report Charter School Achievement on the 2003 National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is published by the American Federation of Teachers. She joins us from her home here in Washington. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Tell us basically what you did and how it compares. I mean, we say across the board, these were studies of kids in fourth grade?
Primarily fourth grade, but we also have test results for eighth grade. Though for eighth grade, we couldn't do as many comparisons because the sample wasn't as large. And I should point out that I had two co-authors on this study. We didn't do a research study at all. That's sort of the simplicity of this. What we did was unearth test results on the National Assessment of Educational Progress that the government had essentially buried in a data dump. All of the other results for the 2003 NAEP had come out, and they just dumped them in this data dump without any public announcement, which is unprecedented. And they were going to do some report much later on that included some sort of special analysis to explain their performance, which is also unprecedented, and against the explicit policy of the governing board for the national test. So we did it just like the reports for the national test come out, no more and no less. So a lot of our critics have said that, oh, we did our research wrong, we did that wrong. We did it just like a straight-out report from the national assessment. And the results were, they were dismayingly low, particularly in light of the rather lofty claims that charter school supporters, or should I say zealots, it's mostly the zealots that make hyperbolic claims. And we did every fair comparison. We didn't only look at charter schools compared to regular public schools on average. We looked at poor kids in charters compared to poor kids in regular public schools. And there were statistically significant differences in math and reading on that because charter schools tend to disproportionately locate in inner cities. We look just at inner city public schools and just at inner city charter schools. Again, very significant differences that went against the charter schools. So that's what we did, and as you pointed out at the beginning, there's been a furor over this. And here's the national test that's been coming out for 35 years, making reports about regular public schools. Some of the worst critics tend to use the results when it comes to public schools and when they're not very good as sort of a blunt instrument against public education. But when charter schools get this kind of a light, somehow or other they're exceptional, they have to be evaluated on a different basis. I mean, these are just sort of plain vanilla facts.
Given that one of the complaints of your critics is that charter schools are, for the most part, relatively new, and that this kind of evaluation, A, is a snapshot, and B, is premature.
It is absolutely a snapshot. The national test is always a snapshot. That's true of public schools, too, and we've pointed that out, and they sneer at us when we point it out about public schools, so now it's important to them. But frankly, we're interested in finding out how newer charter schools compare to older charter schools. Unfortunately, the administration is still suppressing the data that would make that kind of analysis available. When the charter schools were tested for the national test, they got a special questionnaire, and it asked all sorts of questions about how long they've been in operation, what kind of curriculum they have, a whole bunch of questions. We would love to know the answers to that, but that is not on that internet site where we found these buried results. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to have them available for analysis, not just for us, but for any independent researcher. But instead, the administration is holding on to that to do its own special analysis. And that ought to be of concern to people.
And others say that the AFT is not exactly without interest in this debate, that you've got a dog in this fight.
Well, they say that, but they're wrong. The fact of the matter is the American Federation of Teachers pretty much started the charter school movement in 1988. Our president, Al Shanker, our late president, started this. We had a very different vision of it. It was a far more rigorous vision. Now, along the way, it sort of got hijacked by entrepreneurs and ideologues for the most part. I mean, there are charter school supporters who are not blinded this way. And current time, we have a very agnostic attitude. It depends. There are some outstanding charter schools, and there are some very poor ones. But the facts are the facts. And, you know, you do a dispassionate pursuit of the truth, and you go where it leads you, even if it's uncomfortable. And this is the only nationally representative sample we have of charter schools and their achievement. And what it tells us is that, in the main, they are doing poorly, and certainly compared to the claims of the zealots about, you know, they were going to absolutely turn around low achievement among low-scoring kids. They were going to perform miracles for disadvantaged kids, and none of those claims are materializing.
Bella Rosenberg, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Bella Rosenberg, one of the authors of the report by the AFT that pointed out the differences between charter and public school students, published by the American Federation of Teachers. She was with us from her home here in Washington. Often the argument over public school versus charter school is couched in terms of liberal versus conservative. Joe Nathan is director of the Center for School Change at the Humphrey Institute at the University of Minnesota. He was an inner-city public school teacher. His wife is one now. He says he's someone who would normally be characterized as being on the political left. He also says he's definitely not against public schools. He sent his children to one. Sometimes, though, you need an alternative, he says, and he joins us now from his office in Minneapolis. Thanks very much for joining us.
Neil, good to talk with you. Thank you.
You were among the early leaders of the charter school movement. How come?
Neil, I've been an inner-city public school teacher and administrator, as you mentioned. Our children have gone to inner-city public schools, and I believe strongly that families and educators need options. And I think it's important to note that while the American Federation of Teachers document looks at 1% of the charters, there are many, many studies that find much better results for charter schools done by much more dispassionate organizations than the AFT.
Well, that's the AFT's analysis. They didn't do the study.
Right. Well, the AFT did an analysis, and they came up with their own conclusions. I'm looking right now at a column that the president of the American Federation of Teachers wrote in 1993, in which he said that charter schools are a quick fix that won't fix anything. So we really need first to understand the charter idea, and the AFT has vigorously opposed the idea that groups of parents and teachers would be allowed to create new kinds of schools that would be responsible for results. All over the country, there are terrific examples of charter schools, and all over the country, there are examples done by university professors, some of them, by the way, quite opposed to vouchers, like John Whitty in Wisconsin, who have come out with very strong positive findings for charter schools, or the legislative auditor in California that strongly commended the charter movement, and they don't have a dog in this hunt. You mentioned liberals and conservatives. I'm considered a Wellstone Democrat. Paul Wellstone, the late Paul Wellstone, a good friend, was a strong supporter of not only the idea but the school. So we have a lot more research on this beyond the 1% sample that's just been described.
And some of this, though, sounds similar to the criticisms that, charter school advocates made about public schools. They looked at these kind of report cards and said, Gee, that's why we need alternatives.
Neil, our children, as was mentioned earlier, attended inner-city public schools. Charters are public schools, and we believe strongly in looking at the best ideas of district public schools and charter schools. We also think that it's important, just as National Public Radio was created by a group of people who didn't have to get permission from commercial radio stations to set up something new, or McDonald's didn't have to get permission from another fast food franchise. We think it's important, as long as people are responsible for results, to give people a chance to carry out new ideas. That's how this country gets better.
Let's get a caller in on this. Denise joins us from Lansing, Michigan.
Hi. I'm glad to be a part of your show today. Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
I'm calling because I worked for a charter school for several years, and one of the things that I was most concerned about is the fact that the family and friends pretty much ran the school. And it ended up being that there was no consistency. They had several management companies come in and run the school. Every management company, every principal that came through the school had a different form of thought as far as education is concerned. So the kids were basically experimented on for years. And there has been no consistency. And my problem is that if you're going to set up a charter school, it should be run with consistency, that the board should believe in what they're putting together as an educational program and stick to it. Give it some time to grow and for them to learn how to use the program and implement the services that are provided. Because as it stands, the school doesn't look any different from the public school system. My thing is, if you're going to go with something that's broke, why go somewhere else? Why not stay with what you know is consistently doing what it's doing?
Okay, Joe Nathan?
Denise, thanks for your call. Charter schools vary enormously, and just as no one would condemn a national teachers union because teachers, locals in, say, Miami and Washington, D.C., where the AFT is located, nobody would say the AFT is an inappropriate organization because some of its locals have done bad things. I think we need to look at the variety of charters and learn from the best ones. But there's absolutely no doubt that some of the charters in this country have not operated in an effective manner, just as some district schools have not operated in an effective manner. I completely agree. Some of them do not operate well.
And what do we do with ones that do not operate well?
Neil, the charter idea is fundamentally four things. First, that people ought to have a chance to carry out their dreams, number one. But number two, they're responsible for results. So unlike district public schools, charter schools are expected to show improvement and achievement over a 3 to 5 year period. And hundreds of them have been closed because either they were not operating in an effective manner financially or they were not improving achievement. So there is a built-in renewal of contract. Now, has that worked perfectly in every case? Absolutely not. You know, this is a little bit like the charter world. It's a little bit like 1787. I mean, we tried to pass a constitution. We need to make some adjustments. We need to learn how to work effectively with accountability. And by the way, not just look at standardized test scores, but attendance, whether young people are ready for college or university. So using a variety of measures. And part of what we have to do with all of these schools, this is a requirement throughout the country, is to have a 3 to 5 year review of how they're doing.
Denise, go ahead, if you make it quick.
Unfortunately, our school has gone through that 3 to 5 year review. The school ended up with a D rating, and they've been given another chance because another management company has come in, and I just feel it's a travesty for the children. If this management company that has come in is going to take the school and move it to the level that it needs to be from the premise that it was established on, then great. Unfortunately, they've been allowed more time to pull themselves together. And like I said, again, I think it's a travesty to the children because, again, the kids are being treated as an experiment.
Denise, I'm afraid to cut you off, but we're running out of time. We appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
And Joe Nathan, thank you for your time today.
Sure.
Joe Nathan, director of the Center for School Change at the Humphrey Institute at the University of Minnesota, and he joined us from his office in Minneapolis. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about renewed controversy over charter schools. How do we evaluate which ones work, which ones need help, and which ones need to be closed down? Did you enroll your kids in a charter school? If so, what factored into your decision? If you're contemplating sending them to one, how are you evaluating the school? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is TOTN at NPR.org. Now we want to hear from some people who run the real thing and about the challenges they face. David Domenici is co-founder of the Maya Angelou Public Charter School here in Washington, D.C., and he joins us from his office in the District of Columbia. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Hey, Neil, how are you doing?
Very well. I wanted to ask you what you thought of the AFT report that, again, for those of you joining us late, showed kids in charter schools and mostly fourth graders doing less well than their counterparts in public schools.
Well, it's a good thing that people are getting data. It's really great that people are starting to do some thoughtful research out there. And I think it does show that everybody involved in public education, even charters, need to remain committed to reform, to improvement, to ongoing reflection, and thinking about how we can really create really good options for young people.
So where does your school, the Maya Angelou School, where does this fall in terms of this report?
Well, we're a high school, and we primarily are an alternative public charter school, so we market and look primarily to work with young people who have not succeeded in large traditional urban schools. So in our case, students, families, parents, social workers, other community members tend to seek us out, and they want to get their kids here, and they tend to be seeking us out because they want a school that's smaller, they want a school where students have smaller classrooms. We happen to do some other pretty unique things. We stay in school through the dinner hour till 7:15 every night. We run through the summer. We have job training built into the academic curriculum. So one of the things that we do, and a lot of public charter schools do, is provide some options for students and parents, particularly for parents and students who have reasons to think that their neighborhood school isn't one that works well for them.
Are you saying the measure of success for your school in particular shouldn't necessarily be how your kids do on standardized tests?
I'm not saying that per se. I think we think standardized tests can be one valid measure of how students are doing and how a school is doing. And at our school, oddly, our students have done quite well and shown significant improvement on their SAT scores. They haven't shown a corresponding increase in their Stanford 9 scores. And so one of the things we're looking at here is what's the distinction there? Why are students improving their SAT scores measurably and not improving their Stanford 9 scores measurably? And we're not sure of that, but that's the sort of thing that small, thoughtful, reflective schools want to be doing, and that's what district schools, that's what all public schools to be doing, which is to say, if your results aren't exactly what you want them to be, how are you going to go back and look and see how you can improve things? At our school, we also are looking hard at where our students have come from and where they're going to, and nationwide, when students drop out of school in the ninth grade, it's very, very rare for them to get back into high school, go on to graduate high school, and go on to college. And one of the things that we're finding here is that although about 50% of our students didn't really attend school the year before they came here, they're attending school here about 90% of the time and going on to get a high school diploma, and about 70% of them are going on to try college. So by those measures plus some others, we feel good about what we're doing. We do agree that one valid measure of all this is how kids are doing on straight-up standardized test scores, and we're committed to trying to work on that, too.
Bill from St. Louis, listening to KWMU, asks an email question. Are publicly funded charter schools being held to the new No Child Left Behind standards?
Yes, we are held to the same standards. We get measured for meeting adequate yearly progress every year. We report out to parents. And the same sort of options that students who go to traditional public schools would receive if their schools don't meet adequate yearly progress after a couple years are available to students at charters. Oddly, though, at charters, that's always an option. And that's one of the things that No Child Left Behind Act is basically offering parents in traditional schools. At our school, of course, if you go to school here for a year and you don't feel like your child is getting the education you want, then you would remove your child, and that's what a charter is all about. In some of the larger districts, good or bad, it's No Child Left Behind or similar laws that are finally giving parents and students a chance to opt out. Everybody in a charter, of course, can opt out.
Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Chris, who's with us from Denver, Colorado.
Hi. I'm not sure this is quite on point, but I remember reading this article about this topic in the New York Times, and they were talking about how the fourth graders were proficient at about 28% in charter schools compared to the 35% in public schools in math and English. And I'm concerned that nobody seems to be up in arms that the public schools are also performing badly. It's not just the charter schools. If we lose children at fourth grade, we only have 30% of them proficient in math and English. How do we expect them to succeed?
Yeah, if you were giving them a report card, David, you'd give them both Fs.
Well, I think that's part of the issue here, and that's why we, instead of throwing rocks or stones at each other, we need to be working together on this. Charters, although some people may suggest that charters and charter school leaders were out there saying this was the cure-all, for many of us, opening a charter school was a way to try to meet a real pent-up demand and a real need in a community. And in the District of Columbia, there was a real need for small alternative options for young people, particularly for older teens who had not been doing that well or who had gotten off onto the wrong track. And we see ourselves here as part of the solution. We're working with the District of Columbia. We're working with other social service delivery agencies to figure out what do we need to be doing to provide good options for teenagers. For those fourth graders that you're talking about, we all need to be concerned, and we need to make sure that we're not all getting off target here and just getting involved in politics as compared to thinking at every school level, at every district level, at every state level, what are we doing to encourage quality teaching, quality instruction, thoughtful reflection, community engagement? And if we keep doing that, our schools will improve. If we don't do that, we'll just end up 3 years from now with another study that might say one type of public school or one type of option school is doing 5 percentile points better than another. You're right. Neither one should make any of us feel all that great.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Chris.
I'm up in arms about that, about the whole public school issue.
Yeah. Thank you. What about the critique, and this is certainly not new to you, but that, you know, if public schools are doing badly and if charter schools are not doing significantly better, at least according to this one test, this one snapshot, why, you know, charter schools to some degree divert resources from public schools? Why can't we just fix public schools?
Well, I think it's important to note that public charters don't divert public money from public schools because public charters are public institutions. Public charters are a way to do some thoughtful piloting if we do it correctly. They should not be a place to do just crazy experimentation, and that's correct. But in the District of Columbia and in most of the states in the country, there's plenty of room to thoughtfully think at the district level about what sort of changes we should be making. And there's plenty of room for individual charter school operators or larger charter school operators to be working, hopefully hand-in-hand with the research institutions, with universities, with public policy experts, and more, hopefully, with community groups to think about what's really going to work for young people, what's really going to help all of us improve options for kids.
Email question from Lauren Worley in Oklahoma City. Is there a place on the web where a parent can check a particular charter school's report card? I'm not sure if you know that answer for Oklahoma, but what about the Maya Angelou School?
Sure. In D.C., you can go to the D.C. Public Charter School Board's website. And there's a report card on each public charter school. And in the state of Oklahoma, there probably is a similar place. Whoever's the charter school organizer should be posting their annual results. We, for example, at our website, www.cforever.org, actually post for the world to see our annual report from last year. And in that annual report, we're pretty honest about things. We actually think we're very honest about things. We talk about things we're doing well. We talk about what we feel good about. And we talk about areas where we're trying to improve. And it's out there for everybody to see.
Do you think there's enough accountability for charter schools?
There is enough accountability for charter schools. Education work and education reform is quite candidly very, very difficult. Things don't happen overnight. It takes a long time to get a school started. It takes a long time to try to make improvements. Related to the snapshot of how students are doing in fourth grade, what we really need to be looking about is longitudinal studies. How are students doing over 2, 3, 4, 5 years? Are they improving on their percentile scores? Are they improving in their proficiencies over time? And too much now we're looking at one snapshot, 1 year. What's the status of this group of kids? What we want to be trying to do at our school and what we all should be trying to do is say, a student starts with you in the first grade. Where do they need to get to by the fifth or sixth grade? And are we making progress each year along the way? And to the extent we don't meet the progress, how do we fix that? How can we be reflective with their students, parents, and our teachers to help them improve?
David Domenici, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
David Domenici, co-founder of the Maya Angelou Public Charter School here in Washington, D.C. He joined us from his office at the school in the District of Columbia. Mike Feinberg joins us now. He's superintendent of the K-12 KIPP Academy in Houston, Texas, co-founder of KIPP, the Knowledge is Power program. KIPP schools have been singled out for their success, and he joins us now from his office in Houston, Texas. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me on your show.
All of the accounts show that your schools perform well compared to public schools. Is that right?
Yes, we're very proud of our KIPPsters. They're working hard, they're being nice, and they're on their way to college. And our oldest kids are actually already in college in high numbers, so we're very proud of them.
And these are charter schools?
About 80% of our schools, yes, indeed, are charters.
And
the two founding ones we start here in Houston, New York, are charters as well.
And the reason they were started was in response to, is stifling bureaucracy too strong a term?
That's probably actually too light of a term. Dave Levin and myself, who started KIPP back in 1994, we were two fifth grade teachers who were very frustrated at the limit of what we were able to do to make a big impact on our kids' lives. And so in our search for what could we do to do right by our kids and help them get on the road to college and get to college, the charter movement provided an opportunity for us to take everything we were doing in a classroom and blow it out school-wide.
And are these techniques that are being shared with other schools as well as the ones that you're running?
Oh, as much as we can. We have an open-door policy. We try to help as many fellow teachers and schools as we can, and that's also why back in 2000 we partnered up with Don and Doris Fisher, the founders of The Gap, and Scott Hamilton, who is running their foundation, and we create a new foundation together to train other great teachers out there to help them to open up their own KIPP-like school working in underserved communities around the country.
What do you make of the AFT report? Again, this is a snapshot of fourth graders, but it does raise some disturbing thoughts.
Remember, now you're asking a fifth grade teacher's on the front line every day trying to teach the kids reading, writing, and math. So I don't know if I'm the best person to get in the middle of this political debate. From what I can gather, I think it as Dave was saying earlier, it's great that data is starting to get out there. We're starting to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I do find it interesting that the uproar is over one snapshot. If I make the analogy to a classroom, I would never take a kid's test who made, let's say, a 78 on the math test and make sweeping conclusions on how poorly or how great of a student he or she is. I would need to see some additional tests and look at the value added over time. The NAEP has been around for a long time, and we have lots of longitudinal data on the traditional public school system. Charters are relatively new. I think the jury's probably a little bit too out to start making some sweeping generalizations based on that data.
Is it too early to start asking questions?
Oh, no, not at all. We should definitely be asking questions. I think that's the whole purpose of the charter movement, is to start empowering people to ask more questions. Now that parents have wherever there's a charter school, now that parents have a choice of what public school their kids can attend, that fosters more questions. What school is right for my child? Which one will do the best job of helping my child get what he or she needs? I think that's what the charter movement is bringing to this, a healthy level of competition within the public school system.
We're talking about charter schools with Mike Feinberg, superintendent of the KIPP Academy in Houston. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get a caller on the line. Carrie's with us from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, Carrie.
Okay. I have two children that are in school right now. They are both teenagers. And one of them is a high-functioning autistic child who, had I not been proactive when she was just starting school in kindergarten, we would have never gotten her education into place. And a charter school would have been quite out of the question for us, because charter schools would not address special ed. And so if I have a question here, my question is, how do charter schools address special ed?
Sure. Well, Carrie, thanks for that question. Given the fact that charter schools are not cookie cutters of each other, there's no way to answer that question in one sweeping word. I think there are schools that are started for charters for focus on a wide range of abilities and children. There are charters out there that are opened up to focus specifically on nothing but a special ed population. I can speak of my experience at our school in Houston. We certainly do serve a special ed population. We have about the same percentage of kids identify as special ed as in the neighboring traditional public school system. we mainstream with modification as much as we can. We contract out with other experts where we don't have the expertise on staff ourselves, and we serve who comes our way. We certainly are not experts on every type of special ed. And I think that's actually one thing that I think our traditional public schools have been set up for failure. That they have to be everything to everyone, instead of allowing some schools in a public school system to be able to focus and get very good at serving the type of children, Carrie, which you need your children to get great service on.
Well, the only thing is that because I became her advocate, there are state laws that are in place that are also federally mandated,
right.
And you have a special ed child, and as her advocate, I was able to utilize those laws to get her education into place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that could happen in a charter school.
Oh, well, in the charter school, because we are publicly funded, charters have to follow the same state and federal mandates as a traditional public school system.
Carrie, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we get one more caller in with Andy from Denver, Colorado.
Hello.
Andy, you're on the air.
Oh, well, I just was calling in response. I think you guys have a great conversation going on here, and I'm a former charter school teacher and also have taught in very traditional public schools as well. And I just wanted to point out, a caller said earlier that we shouldn't treat kids as an experiment with these charter schools. And, I mean, really, we just need to keep in mind that the traditional model of industrial education and putting kids in the classroom to learn everything is kind of an experiment itself when you think about the human experience and how long we've been around and learning things. And I think as much choice as we can offer parents and kids is a good thing. And this report that's come out to say that especially fourth graders aren't learning as well in charter schools, I mean, all you've had the experts on who know a lot more about structuring these schools than I do, although I've taught in some. And let's just remember that, you know, diversity is a good thing, and the more choice we can offer, the most important thing is that good teaching and good administrators make the difference more than anything else.
Mike Feinberg, I assume you're going to agree with that.
Oh, I'm singing amen over here. Andy's absolutely right. At the end of the day, it really isn't about traditional public schools. It's about charter schools. Those are just two ways to deliver public education to different communities. It's what we believe at KIPP, and we're trying to advocate around this country, is that great teachers and great principals will help great results and help students achieve great things. Not necessarily the structure they come from.
Andy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Mike Feinberg, we appreciate your time.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate it.
Mike Feinberg, superintendent of the KIPP Academy in Houston, Texas, co-founder of KIPP, Knowledge is Power program. He joined us from his office in Houston, Texas. Today, we're talking about the challenge of evaluating charter schools, this following the publication of a report earlier this month that compared charter school and public school students. This in the so-called national report card, it showed that kids in charter schools were doing significantly worse than kids in public schools, a snapshot of some children in the fourth grade. Joining us now is Nina Reese. She's Deputy Undersecretary in the Office of Innovation and Improvement at the U.S. Department of Education. She's with us from her office here in Washington. Good of you to be with us.
Thanks for having me.
The AFT report shows that information about charter schools was buried inside the government's report. The implication, a strong implication, being that this was a political embarrassment and the government wasn't going to publicize it.
Well, in reality, if you were to call the National Center for Education Statistics at any point in time between the time when they posted this information and even today and ask anyone to walk you through accessing this data, they'd be more than happy to do that for you. Fact of the matter is, though, that data set was primarily designed to ask a lot of different types of questions about different qualities of our educational system, public and private, and charter schools was just a small subsection of that report. So the fact that this was not highlighted initially when the report came out is primarily just an indication of all the other types of things that were in the report and not so much an omission of any kind.
So the charter schools are being evaluated the same way that regular public schools are, and the data is being made public in the same way?
Yes.
And will be in the future?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things we're doing with the data set that we found is produce a report by the end of the year, this year, that will give us a lot more information about what was found through the National Assessment of Educational Progress Test, because as you read in the New York Times report and in other places, there was a questionnaire that accompanied the the tests. And in that questionnaire, researchers will be able to really find out a lot more information about how old the charter schools that participated in the study are and how much autonomy they got. So through that analysis, we'll be able to really tell if there was something about charter schools specifically that led to the test scores, or if we need to do more studies in order to identify what we need to do in order to see if charter schools are effective at raising student achievement.
Here's an email question we got from Kelly Thornton in Portland, Oregon. My children attended a charter school in California for 3 years. I pulled them out finally because they were sorely lacking in attainment. There were whole scopes of the educational spectrum that were being left out. The school was using materials that didn't conform to state standards. What oversight is in place to see that this situation doesn't happen? I found that with the involvement of certain parents in the community created a clique that excluded others from participation in school development. What should a functional charter school do to ensure this situation doesn't exist?
Okay, there are a lot of questions in this one question. First and foremost, one of the beautiful things about a charter school is that they are schools of choice. So if a parent is unhappy about the selection that they've made at any point in time, they can remove their child out of that school and enroll them in another school. Second thing is usually the thing that makes them so unique is that they are in place thanks to a contract that they've signed with what we call a chartering authorizer. That entity needs to make sure that that charter school is not only accountable to meeting state standards, but also accountable to a number of different fiscal indicators. And if the charter school does not meet the requirements of the contract after 5 years, by and large, that contract can be ended and that school can be closed. In fact, to date, we have about 133 charter schools that have closed down as a result of this kind of accountability, which, to be honest, we need to have in all different sectors of our education system, be it public or charter.
Some chaos ensued, I gather, a couple of weeks ago in California. I think 60 charter schools run by one company were all closed as school was getting ready to start again.
Well, again, one of the good things about charter schools that we would like to see other public schools also adopt is the fact that they can be shut down if, for whatever reason, they're not performing well.
2 weeks before Labor Day, they could have picked a better date.
Well, there are a lot of school systems that are trying to close down poor-performing public schools. I think it's better to shut down a school that you suspect is not going to do well academically or fiscally than let it open and then close it halfway through the year, or let children attend the school for an entire year when you know for a fact that that school is not fit to serve the children's needs.
Another email question, this is from Hal J. What about the belief, maybe fact, not sure, he writes, that charter schools and private schools pay their teachers significantly less than public schools?
That is true. And one of the things that is often forgotten in the debate about charter schools is that they are supposed to be getting the exact same amount per pupil than the public schools receive. But in reality, in most of the allocations that state make to charter schools, they oftentimes get shortchanged. And as a result, the other thing that also happens is that because most charter school operators don't have a school building, when they open a charter school, they end up spending a lot of their time trying to find a facility to fit the students in and try to do a lot of fundraising in order to purchase a building. So these types of discrepancies make it very hard for a charter operator to operate at a level playing field compared to their counterparts in the public school system, and that's something that the department is very eager to address. Now, having said that, one of the things that we've done since we're talking about charter schools and studies of charter schools, and because of the attention that the AFT report has gotten, I should just mention to you that our Office of Innovation and Improvement, recently produced a report looking at about 8 charter schools around the country that have done a good job of using innovative methods at raising student achievement, and all of which are also closing the achievement gap. I think in this debate about charter schools, it's also very important to look at some of the schools that have overcome the odds in closing the achievement gap, even though they're getting less per pupil than the regular public school system is getting. I think there are a lot of lessons that we can learn from these effective charter schools that, for whatever reason, we have not been able to draw and the public school system has not sought out.
Nina Rees, thank you so much.
Sure.
Nina Rees, Deputy Undersecretary in the Office of Innovation and Improvement at the U.S. Department of Education, with us from her office here in Washington.